Hi, this is Leo, and this is my KFI podcast. This show originally aired on Saturday, May 6th, 2006, on KFI AM 640 in Los Angeles. This is show number 245.
May 6th, 2006.
Right now it's 64 in Fullerton, 61 in Irvine, 60 in Northridge, and it's 63 in Manhattan Beach. KFI is the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. At 11:06, I'm Deborah Mark, KFI News.
Thank you, Deborah. Good morning, Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is the phone number, 1-800-520-1534. I kind of started something with Bill. Now I got to finish it. We're talking about the shopkeeper's law. And actually, I got the idea from an email from Michael. And it started a couple of weeks ago when I was talking about how I was worried about the ethical implications of returning a cell phone that I had gotten wet. Fortunately, it came back to work, and so I didn't have to worry about it. But I thought that stimulated an interesting conversation, and Michael sent me an email saying that he was interested by it, and he also wanted to talk to me about what he called a Jewish law, the shopkeeper's law. He said, when I was 13, I learned at Hebrew school that we were forbidden to take up a shopkeeper's time if we know we will not make a purchase in his store. He says he also thinks he might have read something like that in a book by Rabbi Joseph Talishkin. Interesting, the shopkeeper's law. Now, you heard me talking earlier about it with Bill, and he just said, well, come on, that's just life, right? And I certainly don't think the shopkeeper's law applies when you go into a store where you're just a number. Places like, I shouldn't mention any names, but I'll mention Best Buy. Best Buy recently just launched a campaign to categorize its customers and to target them more effectively. So they named some customers, what do they call? I'll have to look this up. Young gadget buyer, affluent gadget buyers who will buy anything. And there's just certain kind of customers they want and certain kind of customers they don't want. And they were very upfront about it. Well, see, in a store like that, I don't mind taking up their time. Because, hey, they're treating me like a commodity. I'm going to treat them like a commodity. What we're talking about is going into a store to do research or to try a product and then going somewhere cheaper or more likely in this day and age online to buy something for a lower cost or minus the California sales tax. And it's true, if you do that, you've wasted the shopkeeper's time. And I think in a small mom and pop shop, that's an issue. Although, as I pointed out to Bill, I think everybody who comes in the door of any store is a potential customer, and it's up to the shopkeeper to turn them into a customer. That's something that Best Buy doesn't really care about. They call it the... I've got the story here from... looks like Retailing Today. They call it the Customer Centricity Initiative. Maybe the Customer Eccentricity Initiative. Here's the deal. Centricity focuses on four, they call them, core customer segments. Barry, an upper-income professional. Buzz, a younger technology enthusiast. Ray, a middle-income family man on a budget, and Jill, the soccer mom. They do a test in each store's market and then implement merchandising and sales tactics to a target of the appropriate groups. So, I mean, after all, if a store starts treating you like a demographic group, it's okay to treat them like a research library, I think. But what about a smaller store, mom-and-pop store? Do you have a problem wasting their time? Or do you just think that this is an opportunity for them? And if they really impress you, and they offer a good price, a compelling price, why wouldn't you buy there? I mean, you know, maybe if it's only a little bit more. It's interesting. They're actually considering or contemplating. I'll put a link to this article in the show notes. But they're contemplating redesigning Best Buy stores to kind of target these customers and send them into the right area, and presumably to throw out or to discourage customers they don't want. In fact, they're even thinking of figuring out if some stores are particularly good in a certain demographic, really redesigning that store to fit that demographic. That's what's going on with the, you may have seen the Magnolia Home Theater locations inside the Best Buys. They're aimed at Barry. The what is Barry is the high-end, the affluent tech enthusiast. I guess, I mean, I don't know. I don't know which one I'm in. What one are you in? So, for instance, if in a store that targets Barry's, they're going to get the move the home appliances off to the side or maybe even get rid of them entirely in that store. And maybe upgrade the home theater stuff because Barry likes home theater. Jill, Ray, Buzz, and Barry. Jill stores for the soccer mom, the only woman in the group. Stock products and offer services for her and her family. The greater emphasis, they say, on home and kitchen appliances, Hello Kitty and Disney products, and the addition of personal shopping assistance. See, Barry doesn't want assistance. And he's not very price sensitive, and he certainly doesn't want anything with the word Disney or Hello Kitty on it. There's a good article about all of this. Actually, it's in Wikipedia, of all places, is another article. So I'll put links to that in the show notes. So the way is it wasting? It's an interesting issue. I think in this day and age, certainly, if you go in a mom and pop store and you like the people and the salesman's really been helpful, aren't you likely to buy there even if it's a little more expensive? Not a lot more expensive, not twice as much, not 50% as much, but you'd spend an extra 10 or 15 or 20%, wouldn't you, in that store because you really like them and you're impressed with them? I think I would. And on the other hand, if a store thinks, like Best Buy apparently, that you're just a demographic target, well, I don't mind moving on to another store where the price is lower once I've found out what I need to know. Best Buy is a great place to do research. Now, and I don't feel like you're ripping off Best Buy for some reason. The guy you're talking to is paid by the hour. He's getting paid. It's not, the corporate office, say they have 700 stores or something, they don't mind. 1-800-520-1KFI. Let's talk about that. Apple is on the move. Have you seen the new Apple ads, the new Apple TV ads? Very interesting. I'm not sure exactly what they're up to, but they're up to something.
Hello, I'm a Mac.
And I'm a PC.
So the PC is in a suit, iPod. Very business looking.
Yeah, it's just a little something to hold my slow jam.
The Mac guy is in Vans and a hoodie. Kind of ill-shaven, obviously 20.
iLife. Well, I have some very cool apps.
And creative.
Well, like what do you got?
Calculator.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Clock. A clock.
Sounds like hours of fun.
Yeah.
Or at least minutes.
It's an interesting ad campaign, particularly since it makes it Apple look like it's for the young, hip, creative type and not for anybody who's trying to get anything done. Which is kind of true, I guess, at least not any business done. Some say this is, in fact, Think Secret and the other big Apple rumor sites say this ad campaign, which launches this week, is also a kind of softening up expedition to get people ready for the new MacBooks, the consumer laptops, which everybody seems to agree are coming out next week, around Tuesday, says some. And there was a little, a slip up on the Mac, on the Apple website that pretty much confirmed it, showing a link to a MacBook, not a MacBook Pro, but a MacBook. These will be probably the iBook equivalents, the low-priced ones, although one, the widescreen, is rumored to have a lot of the features, including a Core Duo of the high-end. Here's another one of these Apple ads. I think they're very creative and very funny.
Hello, I'm a Mac.
And I'm a PC.
These are TV ads, so you're not seeing the picture. The Mac and PC are holding hands. The PC is in a suit again. Kind of nerdy-looking guy in a suit. Bad haircut. Looks a lot like Bill Gates, actually. And then the young, hip guy in the T-shirt. And the goatee.
Network going here, and it was very easy to set up.
We speak each other's language.
We share internet connection. There are all sorts of things we do together.
Oh.
Who's this?
Now, this is a beautiful young Japanese woman who's just walked in and is not holding hands with the PC, but just with the Mac.
What's...
Oh, this is that new digital camera from Japan. Just came out. Hajimemashite.
Hajimemashite.
Yoroshiku onegaishimasu.
Wait. You speak her language?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Everything just kind of works with a Mac. Arigato.
A little disingenuous since everything also just works with a PC. But, hey, it's an Apple ad. You don't expect them to tell the absolute truth. There are six of them. They're all visible on the available on the... on the Apple site. I think, you can tell a lot from these ads about where Apple's targeting, where Apple thinks its market is, where they think the soft spots are in the PC marketplace. What's interesting to me is how kind of willing they are to give up on the business side entirely and really focus on the kind of creative hip side. The other thing that they've done, which is they've never done before, is they've played the virus card. In the past, Apple has never mentioned or been very reluctant to mention the fact that there's no spyware or viruses, or very few anyway, on the Mac platform. And a lot of Mac aficionados have said, well, wait a minute, that's your number one selling point. Why don't you say anything about it? My suspicion is they didn't want to attract attention of hackers and virus authors. Here's the virus commercial.
Hello, I'm a Mac.
And I'm a PC.
Zuntite, you okay?
No, I'm not okay. I have that virus that's going around.
Oh, yeah.
You better stay back. This one's a doozy.
That's okay, I'll be fine.
No, do not be a hero. Last year there were 114,000 known viruses for PCs.
PCs, not Macs. So, you just grab this.
I think I got a crash.
Hey, if you feel like that'll help, good.
Boy, in some quarters, I think that's asking for trouble. That's almost saying, come and get me. Come on, boy. Come get me, boys. And I think that's why Apple hasn't done it in the past. On the other hand, it is probably the strongest selling point right now for Macs. It's certainly the reason I recommend Macs to a lot of home users is because there are no viruses to speak of. Nothing significant. And there's no spyware either to speak of. So Apple's launched a big campaign for the first time ever. They've mentioned viruses, the V word. They're trying to pretend they're hip, they're cool, they're with it. And PCs are just boring old business machines. And I'll notice they don't mention gaming there. No mention. You see, this is it's an ad. It's propaganda, right? But don't you think Microsoft or Sony or somebody could come back with a pretty strong ad on the other hand saying, hey, look at all the games I play. What games do you play? You start fighting these very, these ad hominem attack ads, political style attack ads. You know what happens. We've seen it happen in politics before. So let's talk about the shopkeeper's law, the rumors about new Macs and the new Mac ad campaign, and anything you want to talk about. If it has to do with computers, technology, the internet, MP3 players, cell phones, camcorders, PDAs, home theater, all of that, anything with technology in it, that's what we'll talk about. 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. 1-800-520-1534. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
KFI News. Fox News. Team to bring you the big stories. KFI AM 640.
11:26. KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Let's go to our very first caller of the day. Kathy in Corona. Hello, Kathy. Welcome to KFI.
Morning, Leo.
Good morning.
Can you hear me okay?
I hear you, yes. I hear myself too a little bit, so... I'm not sure if
Thank
that's...
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, Mike, I have a problem with my floppy disk. Every now and then, it seems like a couple of times a year or three times a year, I'll go and put one in a computer. Now, I don't have a computer, so I have to go to the library or the cyber center or workforce center to use the computers.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't open up. A couple of them won't open.
Floppies are notoriously unreliable. They fail all the time.
Okay, but what would cause it?
Age. They flake off. 6 months down the road, a floppy is useless. It's not at all unusual, Kathy. It's a very poor way to store data, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. So what would be your suggestion?
Well, what most people use now is these USB drives. You have to see if the library will let you, if they, first of all, if the computer they have has a USB connection. And if it does, if the library will yet let you use that in lieu of a floppy.
That's a little thing with the light on the end.
Yep, and they're not expensive. And the great thing is they hold about, you know, I mean, even the least expensive one holds 100 times more than a floppy.
Okay, what is a good size to buy?
Well, what are you storing on there? Is it just letters, documents, things like that, or?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I would buy by price, but because you may not be able to find, I mean, all you need is 128 megabyte one. That floppy holds 1.44 megabytes. So we're talking 10 times the storage on that thing. So I would say that even 128 megabyte will be great for you. If it all fits on a floppy, what you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just the smallest one you can buy is fine.
And they don't go bad?
Never. Well, rarely, unless you get a bad one. But unlike the floppy, there's no moving parts. There's nothing. You know, floppy has a, you know, Mylar disc in it that's got recordable materials like iron on it, and all that does is flake off after a short period of time. It's just like a cassette tape, and so it's a very unreliable way of storing your data. It's not unusual for floppies to go bad. There are other issues too. I mean, the disks can get out of alignment. If you record it on one machine and you go and use a different machine, especially these older machines and libraries are not well maintained, then they may not even be readable. Your best bet, I mean, if you're trying to read that disk, you got data on it and you really need it, is to go back to the exact same machine you created the disk on, if you can remember what one that is. It's most likely able to read it. But then I really would choose a more reliable medium. We used floppies when we had no choice, but that's one of the reasons most PCs are no longer even made with floppy disks. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 11:29. Let's head to the KFI News Center where Deborah Mark has the latest. Folks, I want to talk to you a little bit about high-speed internet. This is a topic that some people say, how could it still be an issue? They go, you mean there are people still on dial-up? Yes, there are. And I know why, because everybody assumes high speed's got to be expensive. That's until they hear what DSL Extreme is charging. DSL Extreme is my internet service provider. They're a great service provider, full service. You get everything you'd want, anti-spam, anti-virus, a firewall, 24-hour great tech support from local folks. But the price is just $12.95 a month. That's the guaranteed lowest price in the country for high-speed internet. Half what AOL will charge you for dial-up. And a lot less than the cable companies and others are charging. But it's just as fast, just as good, just as easy to use. And you get rid of that second phone line. I mean, you're going to love it. Some restrictions apply. Call 866-2-GET-NET right now. 866-2-GET-NET to get the best internet service for a lot less. $12.95 a month only from DSL Extreme. 866-2-GET-NET or visit them online at dslextreme.com.
Stimulate yourself all weekend long. KFI AM 640. More stimulating weekends.
11:37 KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi. Hey. On KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. We're talking about tech, the shopkeeper's law. We're talking about the new Apple ads. There was a kind of a hysterical report from Symantec, you know, McAfee on Apple viruses. And remember, when it's an antivirus company that's telling you about viruses, to take it with a grain of salt. But even the experts, when they saw this McAfee report, had to say, this is absurd. A McAfee executive said Apple Macs are potentially Typhoid Marys that could be spreading virus. I'm sorry, it's hard for me to even say this without laughing. An issue Mac users need to be aware of is that in some cases they can be a carrier. That is because you can have infected files on the Mac that do not infect a Macintosh, but at a later date get transferred to a Windows machine, which they can infect. Basically, he's trying to sell a Windows antivirus to the Mac crowd, saying, well, you need to check for Windows viruses on your Mac. I would like to see the evidence that this happens. Since these viruses can't actually run on the Mac, The only way this could happen is if somebody forwarded you email with a virus attached and you blithely said, okay, and forwarded on to somebody else. But that can happen to anybody at any time. And I doubt you'd do that. I certainly hope you wouldn't do that. Viruses are not an issue on the Mac platform yet. It'd be interesting to see, though. I mean, Apple has really thrown the gauntlet down saying, hey, we don't have any viruses. Ha ha. Knowing the psychology of virus authors, that means they're going to get to work on it. Now, I also know the ability of virus authors, and in most cases, they're too stupid to figure it out. It takes a little more effort to do it on a Mac. You've got to find exploits. You've got to find holes because the Mac OS is not wide open to viruses as the Windows OS is. So I don't. We'll see. This should be very interesting in the next 6 months to see if we see all of a sudden see a bunch of Mac viruses. I don't think we will. Carl, in British Columbia, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Carl.
Hey, Leo.
How are you today?
The reason I'm calling,
yes, sir,
is because Apple insists on 99 cents a song, and I think I have another reason for that.
You know, Apple just won, it seems, because the record companies really didn't like that. They really want to charge more. And Apple fought them and managed to keep it at 99 cents a song. Now, I know there are places like Walmart that charge 88 cents. What is your suggestion?
Well, Apple has never said that the record companies cut should be less than what they're getting right now out of the 99 cents.
No, in fact, Apple gives up, you know, more. We don't know the exact number, but it looks like more than 2/3 of the cost of the song goes to the record company.
Yeah. And because of that, the other online music stores then have to meet that price of what Apple charges.
Right.
And because Apple has said they barely break even,
right,
so do the other online music stores.
Right.
And therefore, Apple's only source of revenue is their iPods.
Right.
And from that, the other online music stores, the only reason they're surviving right now is because of funds that
well, the real reason they're dying
from,
is
investors.
Yeah, and the reason they're dying is because everybody's using, if they're buying online at all, they're buying at iTunes. But what is your proposal?
Well, that the record companies should allow the online music stores to have some sort of profit and not look for other sources of revenue.
I'm sorry. I'm just
like Apple is doing.
I'm channeling a record executive. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You mean give them a bigger cut? Yeah. Right. Look at the record executives tried to strong arm Apple into changing the prices. They wanted Apple to charge less for old songs and more for new songs. And Apple said, no, the consumer will be confused. 99 cents. And I don't know how they managed to convince them of this, but they did hold the line. Now, there is somebody charging less. I don't know if, I guess they're offering it in Canada. I'm not sure, but in the States, Walmart offers its songs for 88 cents. I don't see anybody beating a door to Walmart to buy music. I don't think people are as price sensitive. I think they're more interested in the experience, and frankly, they want to play it back on an iPod. That's why Apple's iTunes Music Store gets 90% of all of the music sales online, is because everybody wants to play on an iPod. So you're saying that the record companies, in order to keep Napster and Rhapsody and these other guys alive, should cut their profits. That'll happen. Yeah, that'll happen. Now, I just should tell you that there may be something going on, because Napster is now offering music, a lot of it, for free. And now, in this case, as you said, Carl, they're losing. Not only were they losing money before, now they're losing a lot of money. The only thing keeping them alive is their investors. But they're desperately trying to get market share. Now, I don't know how you can get any better than free as a way to buy market share. This will be the test. Will people do it for free, even though they have to put up with the crappy Windows Media copy protection? And that's the real issue, I think. It's not that iTunes doesn't have copy protection. It does. And I think all copy protection is terrible. But I think people seem to be more tolerant of the kind of less intrusive copy protection iTunes offers. You know, when you listen to free music from Napster, And they have 2 million songs. You can listen to them up to 5 times absolutely free. But on the 6th play, you either become a Napster subscriber or you have to buy the song. So the real question is, how many people are going to go listen to the songs 5 times and then go buy them on iTunes? Will this win Napster an audience? And I don't think it will, because in order to listen to Napster, first of all, you have to get rid of your iPod. 80% of the market right now. And you have to, you know, have to use Windows Media Player, and it has to check to make sure you bought the song every time you play it or every time you transfer. And it's just a, I think it's too much of a burden, and people don't like it. But if anybody's going to succeed, it's going to be Napster. I guess Carl, the proof of your theory is coming right here. If you drop the price of the song to zero, will people abandon iTunes? See, we'll see. I don't think they will. I think that's what they want. But we shall see. Dave Lancaster, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great, Dave.
I've got a Gateway Media Center, and when I'm watching either live TV, recorded TV, or a DVD on the Media Center, the video hangs, and the audio keeps going for about 20, 30 seconds before Media Center just freezes up. And it doesn't crash everything, just Media Center.
Yeah.
And it actually doesn't close out. It just stays until I give it a 3-finger.
So it's crashing.
Basically, yeah.
And what's crashing is the video playback. The audio playback's working just fine.
Temporarily.
Yeah. Well, eventually the whole thing just collapses
right.
in on itself. You know, I don't know of a quick and easy fix for that. I mean, did you do anything just before this started happening?
No, it happened when I first got it, and it disappeared for 6 months, and now it's back, and I didn't do anything.
Yeah. This is why, by the way, that people who say Windows should be on television sets are not going to win, because nobody wants a blue screen of death on their television set.
Yeah.
There are a couple of things you could try. You could try to replace the video drivers. Often that's the case. It's just a video driver issue, so... That's just a download. You could perhaps reinstall the codecs it's using, although with Media Center, it's all kind of built in. So, you know, I mean, I'll tell you exactly what Microsoft will tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what they're going to tell you. Reinstall Media Center.
Yeah.
Do you have a lot of stuff on that hard drive?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course you do.
I've spent 2 days backing it up knowing you were going to say this.
Well, it's just because it's such a hard thing to... if you could figure it out, there's probably one little thing you could tweak, maybe replace... But they don't make it easy. You'd like to replace Windows Media Player. You'd like to replace maybe the codecs. And you'd certainly like to replace the driver. I think the only thing that's easy to replace is a driver, and I certainly would try that. I would go and find, you know, figure out what video card's in there and get an updated driver for that.
Yeah, I replaced the video card, and I updated drivers.
Oh, boy.
And I even added more memory, thinking maybe it's that...
Because they sell that machine, right? I mean, did you build this yourself, or is this
No, what Gateway sells as the Media Center only had onboard video and onboard sound. That's not much of a Media Center.
Right. So you added some capability.
Correct.
And it started crashing. Was it crashing before you did this?
It crashed before. Then it was fine when I upgraded the video card to a Radeon, X800.
Right. Oh, that's nice. Okay.
And added another gig of RAM, and it came back 6 months later.
Yeah, I think it's a software issue, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like something's getting corrupted. When did you reinstall the driver recently?
Yes.
Yeah. Boy, you know, I mean, all I can say is, I hate to say it, but this is what Microsoft would tell you. It's what Gateway would tell you, is reinstall Windows at this point. Because some brain surgery might work, but I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm. I've run simple maintenance. I always run the spyware and antivirus and all that, and they always come back negative.
Right.
I'm very careful. But
the other thing go ahead.
I went to PC Pit Stop, and they popped up with, I've got the Sony rootkit.
You're kidding.
And they're the only ones that saw it. And, of course, the only people in there recommending their own products.
Yeah, well, go to... Now, you can get Rootkit Revealer from sysinternals.com. And that is actually the real test for the rootkit. I don't trust PC Pit Stop on that. So go to sysinternals.com, and they have a rootkit tester. And there's actually a simple little test you can do, but which is to name a file on your desktop with that name that the rootkits used to hide their files. But I would just, if you're concerned about that, go to sysinternals, and that they'll tell you any rootkit. That'll diagnose any rootkit.
Right.
But I think that's probably not what it is. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's trying to do what you're doing with Windows is a little bit fragile, to be honest with you, or any computer system.
Right. And reinstalling over the top, of course, is bad.
What you want to do is take those system recovery disks that you got from Gateway and run them.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
All right. Well, I appreciate the help.
All right. Hey, thanks, Dave. I wish I had were more help. Maybe somebody who has a media center can maybe give us some better or something else you can do. This is why I say get a TiVo. You know, a computer is probably not the best choice for. I mean, a TiVo is a computer, of course. It's running Linux, but it's not. You know, it's not getting viruses, not getting spyware. It's not. There's no drivers that you have to update and all that stuff. Windows Media Center is selling very well. People like the idea. It's the version of Windows that allows you to record TV and watch on your TV and so forth. But this is exactly why you don't want a computer operating system on a TV. Because computers crash. Because they have problems. 11:50, 10 away from noon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
Radio free for all.
KFI, AM 640.
KFI, AM 640. 11:56 on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. 1-800-520-1534. Jennifer Aliso Viejo, welcome to KFI. Hello, Jennifer.
Hello. I was listening to your segment with Bill Handel.
Yes.
On the people shopping on the internet instead of actually buying from a retailer.
Yeah, what do you think? Are you a retailer?
No.
Are you a shopper?
I'm not. I am a shopper.
And what do you do?
And I would buy from a retailer if they spent time with me. I think that's very important. But the reason that I called was because you mentioned that people are buying on the internet to avoid paying the California sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
California has a law in the books stating that there's a use tax.
I know.
So if you purchase anything, you're supposed to report it.
I know. Did you on the 15th?
Actually, I haven't bought anything outside of California.
Oh, okay. Yeah, technically you're supposed to. And this is a big issue for all the states. They want to collect their state sales tax. And technically what you're supposed to do, and this is, I would imagine there's billions of dollars that is not being declared. You're supposed to keep track of all your internet purchases and then pay, when you pay your California state taxes on April 15th, you're supposed to declare and pay the use tax, which is the equivalent of the sales tax, on all those items. I bet you 1% of all the people who are listening to this show have done that. I bet you most of them don't even know they're supposed to do it.
I would think not. I was surprised that we had the law.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, they really only started taking it seriously a couple of years ago. And I remember when they did, I posed the question, how many of you are going to do this? Nobody said they would. I don't know if there's any way right now to enforce it. I mean, really, we're used to sales tax being collected by the retailer. Mm-hmm. They can't get these online stores to do it. A few do, but most of them they can't. You know, if you do business in California, if you have any brick and mortar business in California, or even if you ship from California, they can get you. But if you're out of state, it's pretty hard to get you. And I have a feeling that, you know, that's a good question. I mean, are they going to start prosecuting people for that?
I think it's probably
terrifying if they do. I won't tell you what I did. Actually, I haven't filed my. Oh, I'm in the. Whew, I filed for an extension. Thank goodness. Yeah, I'm going to do that. You bet. Sure, I'll pay that sales tax. Yes, sir. 11:59 KFI. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Time to head for the newsroom. Lisa Osborne has the latest.
May 6th, 2006.
and 50s on Sunday. Some fog and clouds in the morning, clearing to hazy sunshine by afternoon. A little bit warmer, highs in the 70s, pushing 80 degrees or so in the warmer inland spots. Currently, it's a 67 in Lake Forest. It's 65 in Newport Beach, 63 in Santa Monica, 66 degrees in Burbank. KFI's the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks. It's 12:06. I'm Lisa Osborne, KFI News.
Thank you, Lisa. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. If you're out and about, don't forget Bill Handel is at the Select Comfort Store at the Glendale Galleria. He'll be there for another hour, so stop by and say hi to the legendary, the one, the only, Bill Handel. It's kind of neat that somebody of his stature, I mean, he's the number one radio guy in Southern California. He's so accessible. Especially somebody like him who really hates people deep down. No, I'm just kidding. Go check. Well, maybe I'm not. Go check out Bill at the Glendale Galleria. He's been very nice, very sweet to me. Bill and I just feel like when I first came to KFI about, it's 2.5 years ago now. He just took me under his wing and has been so supportive. And I can't thank him enough, especially since I've spent so much of his money on technology. Expensive computers and cell phones. You know, he doesn't have to be so nice to me. Martini, Hacienda Heights, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Martini.
I'd like to talk to you, or comment on the shopkeeper law, but before that, I'd like to, if I may, you brought up Best Buy, and I'd like to tell you a little bit of an experience I had, if I may.
Yeah.
Take a couple minutes. Have you ever tried to call a Best Buy?
No.
You really?
You know, I don't, calling any store these days is a exercise in frustration, I think.
I like to find out if I'm the only one that experiences this with Best Buy.
What happened?
Well, any time I've ever tried to call a Best Buy, they never answer their phones. I mean, they never. You call and you get a recording that gives you about 20 options. You wait for this and you hear the music and everything, and you get 20 options to pick a department. And then when you pick that department, it just rings and it rings. I mean, it's the most unbelievable thing that,
Well, they shouldn't really give out a phone number. I have to say, on the other hand, I really hate it. And this happens to me. In fact, it just happened to me the other day when I'm in a store talking to somebody and he goes and answers the phone.
Right, right, right.
So there's two sides to that equation. But they probably shouldn't promise you that they'll answer the phone. You know, they should probably.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, up front tell you, you know, hey, look, at you
we're
know,
busy.
If they don't have a number, then you shouldn't. Then you have no problem.
Yeah,
I agree with you.
But that way, you know, almost any store nowadays, you know, it's hard to get anybody on the phone.
I don't know. Fries is pretty good.
Are they?
Fries. I like fries. I mean, fries. I mean, not to give names.
No, I like them too. If I were a company like Best Buy or Fries, I just hire one employee.
Yeah.
It can't take more than one guy to answer phones.
Fries has a crew of people.
Yeah.
They have about four. You know that big old thing that they have.
What Best Buy's doing is they're so cheap is they're making the floor associates answer the phone, and the floor associates are busy. They're trying to help customers.
Try to call one sometime, I don't know, but you might like it.
The way to handle it is you have one guy in every store. That's his job, is answering the phone. Make it the manager. What else is he doing?
Or like you say, don't list the number.
If you're not going to answer. Although I am again sympathetic because I had to stop listing my email address because I couldn't answer all my emails, and I'm sure there's a lot of people saying, "Well, Leo never answers his email either."
Right, right. But see, you did what needed to be done.
I had to stop giving it out.
Right, right. Well, that's because you made a decision that you didn't want people with that kind of. So no one could say, "Well, gee, Leo, don't answer because you don't give it."
I have to
and
do
that
now.
Fine.
Yeah,
but
I didn't want to
put your number out there. You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
And you're running a business. You know, you're running a business.
That's true.
People are calling. But it's just Best Buy is it's a place that is unreal, man. I mean, I recently bought a. Well, I was going to buy it. The whole reason I was talking about this is I called, and I was literally on hold trying to reach them for 2 hours. So finally I went down to the
Best Buy. You have to go down, don't you? Yeah, you have to go.
Well, yeah. But when I got down there, I happened to make the mistake of commenting on their situation with the phone, and the guy just stared at me like I wasn't even saying a thing. Then I asked him about buying a computer, and the guy, I said, I'd like to see a few, you know, because I don't know much about them. I said, can you explain? I like something modern, blah, blah, blah. And the guy show me, well, here, this is on sale. It's a good price. It was some like a $1,400 one. I said, okay, anything else? And he goes, no, this is the one I recommend.
He doesn't want to take the time.
Oh, he did. I mean, but they turned a profit last year, so I guess that's how they're doing.
Oh, yeah, they're successful. You weren't a Barry or a Jill, you see. They didn't know what your they couldn't fit you in that demographic slot that they've got.
Now, go to Google, put Best Buy complaints in, and you will see, unlike any other retailer, a slew of just an amazing amount of people that have had bad experience with this. It's, you know, I guess I have a thing with Best Buy because I had a bad experience recently, but I've had a bad experience with them on several times. I tried to give them a chance to...
Oh, I've had bad experiences. You know, I've had very bad experiences. I was banned from a Best Buy in Northern California because I had such...
Why? I mean, just out of curiosity, because you were...
Well, we were trying to buy something for the TV show, and I had given my credit card to one of my associate producers to go down there, and I called ahead. They told me, bring a letter. And, you know, I talked to the manager of the store, and they told me what to do. They did the whole thing, and they refused to sell it to her when they got down there. I said, well, we followed all your procedures. I don't understand.
Oh.
And so I finally went down. You know, we went back and forth a few times. I finally went down myself. I said, well, I don't understand what the problem is. I talked to you. And they gave me some runaround, and I got more and more irate. And they said, well, your business is not welcome here. I said, fine. I don't think I want to do business.
Do they know who you know, what you do and
no,
who you are?
I don't pull that. I don't like to play that card.
Yeah, but I mean, some people in that business, you would probably know your name.
There's something pretty embarrassing to have to say that. Do you know who I am?
No, I'm saying that you're
Bill Handel.
You're well known in that business.
In fact, I still shop at other Best Buys, and very often the sales associates are very kind to me. They know who I am. And there are a lot of good people who work for Best Buy.
Right.
And I'll tell you what, you go online and you look for complaints in other stores, you'll find plenty of complaints. I mean,
not as many as Best Buy. I'm not trying to, but you're right.
Well, there's a few people in our...
There's good people and there's bad ones.
There's a few people in our chat room, one of our moderators, who will be very quick to tell you how much he hates Best Buy.
Right.
So, I just hope they're not a sponsor. And if they are, well, I guess they're no longer a sponsor on this show.
No, I love them.
I love Best Buy.
I love them. But, you know, at the same time, you know, like you say, you could have a bad experience. It just happened to be my bad experience.
Well, but you are also right. I think I see that quite a bit.
I'm trying to pull that out for you.
That's okay. I don't really care.
Okay. Good for you.
Then. I don't really care.
Let me talk some more. Anyway, on that shopkeeper thing, real quick, I guess if I didn't waste my time.
Not at all. Yeah, go ahead.
I've been in sales, and you know, as far as that goes, I believe what you said is that law was probably made in a traditional, very small oriented.
Sure.
You know, and that should be respectful. Like if it was your mother and father owning the shop, or uncle or Joe, or you know, you wouldn't want to go down there because you pretty much know what they have and what they're doing.
Right.
But when it comes to the retailer, such as Best Buy,
it's changed a lot. Yes.
Yeah, you have to, because I mean, that's the American market is competitive, right?
Right.
You know, and if you went in and didn't although Best Buy, again, not to bring them up, believe in that law, because the guy pretty much said, this is the computer, do you want it or not? Don't waste my time.
Yeah.
But
he didn't let you waste his time, did he? You know, one of the this came up. I was talking to the owner of Bel Air Camera, which is a wonderful camera store in town, and it's a mom and pop operation, but it's a big operation. And
right.
I was asking her about that. I said, you know, how do you feel about that? She said, well, you know, we recognize that that's going to happen because we are very service oriented, and people will come in and they'll look at 20 different cameras and say thank you very much, and they'll go online and buy it. But she said, and I think this is right, this is every customer who comes in the door is an opportunity for a sale, and it's up to the salesperson
to
make that
sale.
And what
it comes down to is really what's going to make that decision is their service, at least with me.
I agree.
Then the price.
And that's what she said.
For some people, it's price. But to me, if I get good service and the price is a little bit high, I'll go for the service
because
I know that this guy is going to take care of me.
I completely agree with you. That's exactly what she said was, you know, we specialize in service, and we know, and our prices are aggressive. So we know we're not going to, you know, we maybe can't meet the lowest price on the internet, but we're going to be very close. And we'll know we'll get them most of the time on service. And I think that's the right attitude. But when you get to these big stores where they don't really care, the sales associate doesn't care. They're minimum wage employees. They're not selling on commission. They don't really care. And it's pretty hard if you're, you know, in a corporate office 4 states away to get them to care. You know, so I'm not surprised, really, that these big retailers, that's how it is. Thanks for the call, Martini. I really appreciate it. Leandra, Apple Valley, welcome. KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo.
Hey, how are you?
I had a generation iPod, the earphone jack went bad on it.
Yeah.
So I went to the Apple service site, and they don't have any help when you have an earphone jack that went bad. So I
All they can do
I
is
went
replace
online
the whole,
and
they
found an earphone jack that I could buy, and I purchased it online.
Oh.
But it didn't come with any install directions, and when I called them, they said there aren't any install directions. I went to an old tech TV show where you opened an iPod.
Yeah.
A Generation 1 iPod, not a Generation 2 iPod.
Yeah.
So where on the internet I can go to find directions for not only opening the iPod, but installing the jack.
Wow, are you ambitious?
I didn't know it would require soldering when I bought
it. I was going to ask you, how are you at soldering?
I know, but I'm a quick learner, so I think I could probably figure out. I thought it would be, I installed a power supply once from Apple, because old G4 went out on power supply, and it was just plug it in.
Yeah, that one's, power supplies are fairly easy, but, and the reason Apple doesn't repair parts in iPods is because really it's a disposable, they consider a disposable product, and they want you to buy a new one.
This is a 10 gigabyte iPod with lots of stuff.
I know, I mean, I don't blame you. And by the way, we don't know what's wrong with it. It may not be just because you can't get any sound out of that thing.
Well, it started being intermittent, and you know, if you twisted it just right, you could get through it. And then finally it reached a point that it wasn't at all.
Yeah, I had that happen.
The jack that went bad.
And you were able to buy that exact part for an iPod online.
The exact part, and it is in a sealed little plastic thing, but they won't take it back.
Well, it was, 10 cents?
So I got the part.
Can't have been that expensive.
And the iPod's not going to work without the jack, so I might as well give it my best shot.
You know, I don't think it's going to be that complicated. I think what you have to do is open it up and look. What you want to look is look very carefully how the leads are wired. You know, which lead goes to which. There'll be two wires going to it, and you just want to make sure you connect them to the same place on the new jack. You'll desolder it. And so I'll tell you what I will put. I don't have it to mind, but I'll look it up for you. There is a very good page on soldering and desoldering, because that's what you're going to be learning. But it's a good skill to learn. And by the time you've bought the soldering iron, the part, the solder, and your hours, you've spent much more than a brand new iPod. However, you've learned a great skill.
Well, I have access to the tools, actually.
Oh, good.
And I have
a
friend, my husband actually has done a little bit of soldering, too.
You might want somebody who's done it before to do it, because a messy solder won't do you any good. You're going to need a very clean, small, I would think, a very clean, small solder. I usually used to
That would be fine. The other thing is, when I went to the tech TV site and saw how to open the iPod, it was a Generation 1, and a Generation 2 opens differently. Stuff is connected in different places.
Yeah.
Where can I find directions on actually opening it without screwing it up?
You'll find that online as well. And it is just friction that's holding it together. It's just that metal back is held on by friction. So it's a question of carefully, gently prying it apart with the right tools.
Well, I did buy the tools along with the part. When I started to take it apart, it looked like the jacks, you know, the firewire jacks and stuff were a part of the silver part. So I stopped. I didn't want to mess.
Yeah, I mean, the reason Apple doesn't service it is because it was never designed to be serviced. It was designed to be thrown out and replaced. I think if you sent it to them, they wouldn't fix it. Let's say it was under warranty. They don't fix it.
Yeah.
They have a big garbage can they throw it into.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because it's too hard to fix those little tiny things. I mean, they're just not fixable. That's the real problem on that. And I think by now you've spent more money or more time than it's probably worth. I mean, you can get a 10, I don't even think you can get a 10 gig anymore. Although there's rumors they're going to do a 10 gigabyte nano. You might want to wait and see what they announce in the next couple of weeks. But I'll tell you what, I will honor your request, Leander. I'm going to do some research and I'll put up on the show notes. I know there's a very good site on soldering. There will be sites, and I'll find them on taking apart second-generation iPods, but I think a Google search will find that for you. It's pretty quick to find. You've got the part. Think of it as a project. A very ambitious project. 1220, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
Rush, he'll set you right. Monday, 9 to noon. KFI, AM 640.
1227 KFI. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Robin Tarzana, welcome to KFI.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Rob.
I've got a problem here.
Yes, sir.
And I'll tell you what it is.
when I use, when I'm using Windows Service SP 2, Service Pack 2, and when I try to use the search function, an error message pops up onto my screen after I click on that search, and the error message says, error, a file that is required to run Search Companion cannot be found. You may need to run setup.
Oh, boy.
I tried to do that. I actually went on to Microsoft's website and looked for the instructions in terms of what's going on and how to correct that. And there were some instructions to try to reinstall the Search Companion. However, when I try to do that, that doesn't work either because it asks me to locate a particular file in the Windows Service Pack 2 disk, which I can't find.
You know, I don't know if you really need the Search Companion. Isn't that just a little dog?
Yeah, that's where I look for a file. It's like where I want to look for a particular file or folder on Windows. Is there another way to do that? Other than, like, I know Google has the desktop program for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And X1 is very good. In fact, the best desktop search, in my opinion, is the Yahoo desktop search, which is X1, has X1 built into it. Yeah, I'm looking right now at the Microsoft Techno. So there are three. It's really not. They're just little XML and XSL files that you need. They're not a big deal.
Yeah, they say it's a locate the. You're supposed to run something in the start and run, and it's percent system root percent backslash INF, and then when I locate.
Yeah, that's the install file.
Right.
Yeah.
And then when I try to do that, I'm unable to complete that task.
It won't do it, huh?
Well, I can right click that file that they tell me to right click, but then when I put in the disk, it cannot locate the file. It says it's looking for a DLL file, actually.
And here's the interesting workaround. It says to prevent this problem from occurring, make sure the Search Companion is closed before you connect to your internet service provider.
I don't quite
That's
get that.
Goofy.
Yeah, really. What in the world does that have to do with anything?
Well, apparently, it's a bug. Look, it's a bug, right? It is a big bug. A couple of things you could do. You might want to try the system file checker, which is another way to try to replace system files. You do that from the command line, and it's a SFC, system file checker. And you enter in the command, which is from the command line. So you open a command line. You'll still need your disk, but you'll enter in the command SFC /, scan now, one word. But what that's going to do is look for the same files and try to replace them. There is a hot fix, apparently. So this was a well-known bug. But I think the real problem is that you have Service Pack 2 on there. And all of this is regarding Service Pack 1. I have a feeling it's some sort of weird interaction between Service Pack 2. Boy, is that annoying. Try the system file checker. That should fix it. 12:30, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Let's head to the KFI News Center where Lisa Osborne has the latest.
Ken Gallagher, tomorrow, 3 to 5 p.m.
KFI AM 640.
KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy at KFI. Well, this Search Companion thing is puzzling me. I have a feeling it's because Microsoft's instructions are for XP Service Pack 1, and things might be a little bit different on XP Service Tech Pack 2. It's the only thing I can see. Although, as I mentioned, a good workaround would be just not to use Microsoft Search. It's not a good workaround, but it... you don't have to use Microsoft Search. The Yahoo desktop search is free. I like it better than Google's because they use X1, which I really like. In fact, if you want to buy a really great search tool, I couldn't recommend X1 more highly. It's a really excellent little program. I think they've dropped the price, too. Leslie, Maryland, KFI. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Leslie. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi.
Yeah,
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I listen to your podcasts all the time.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't understand a lot of it, but hope springs eternal.
My advice, let it wash over you.
That's right.
And
that's
then via osmosis, eventually it all starts to make sense. It doesn't take that long. I mean, really, though we use a lot of jargon in the computer industry, it's not that complicated. Really.
Well, you're very good about that.
Thank you.
You don't You don't rely on too much jargon.
I try.
I have been a long-time Juno user since, you know, way back when, and I'm not that crazy about it, but I like the fact that it downloads my email onto my computer.
As will, by the way, any internet service, but go ahead.
I guess I could get it to do that in Outlook.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, it's been my business email address for so long, I was very reluctant to give it up.
Yes, right.
And now I'm sorry, because the other day it went kersplooey on me, and I couldn't open my Juno, so I backed it up using their backup wizard that they have.
Yeah.
And uninstalled it and downloaded a new version of it and opened, and it, you know, everything seemed to go okay. I restored, supposedly, my emails. But when I opened the program up, they weren't there. And getting tech support from Juno has been, as you can well imagine, not very satisfying.
How much a month do you pay for Juno?
Well, it's actually, I think, like $10 a year.
It's very cheap.
Very cheap.
Right.
And,
but you have to look at ads. I mean, one of the things that Juno, NetZero, and these other guys do is that you have to run their software, and as a result, they can show you ads, and that's how they support the service.
Yeah. Well, they, you know, they were free. I mean, I had their free service for a long time, but then they went to, it was going to be web-based only, and then I said, okay, well, just to hold on to that email address. I mean, that's really been the only motive for it. I got, you know, other email addresses that I could use, but I've use this for my business, and I need those business emails, and they're gone.
Yeah.
And and Juno can't, the tech support people can't help me, and I know that you talk a lot about programs that allow you to find files that are supposedly gone, but really secretly are hiding on your computer.
Right. What, were you using Juno 5 or 6?
5.
Okay. But you've moved to Juno 6 now.
No.
Oh, you stayed with 5.
I mean, I've been using 5, and they haven't really urged me to move to 6.
Okay.
And what I did is I backed it up on my desktop, and then the tech support people tell me that the file is corrupted.
Right.
And I
that would be my guess as well, although there's no way to be sure of it unless we, you know, can really get into it.
Yeah.
I'm afraid what I don't know is where that Juno mail is stored on your hard drive. What file is in? That's kind of what.
Well, they made me delete. At one point, much to my, you know, anxiety, they asked me, they had me delete everything having to do with Juno, because he said, get it all off, everything, this is tech support guy. So everything was deleted, but I had backed up my files, and I had made a copy of that onto a CD.
Good.
Which, to keep it, you know, off my hard drive.
Good.
So I have it, and I've actually copied it back onto the desktop, because that's where Juno looks for it when they go to restore it.
So he was probably right to do that, and although I'm glad you had a backup, because that would, of course, have erased everything. Mm-hmm. So did you make the backup before you had the problem or after?
No, after.
After. Okay. So you hadn't backed up at all beforehand.
Well, no, I had backed up before, but, you know, not for a while.
Right.
And there's a lot of emails that I lost. I noticed when I dragged it into my CD where I keep my backup, where I'd been keeping my Juno backups, that this one was real big. This was really much bigger than the earlier ones, and that made me nervous.
Well, nervous, but it may mean also everything's in there.
Okay.
I think the real issue is, can we figure out which file contains the email, and then can we look at that file with a tool that will allow you to kind of examine the actual raw contents of the file and see if we can pry the emails out of there.
Right.
That's probably not something for you to do. That's probably something you're going to want to find a geek to do.
Okay.
It's not a hard thing to do. I mean, if you were my neighbor, I'd say, bring it on over. Let's take a look.
Right.
And then you'd use a tool like what they call a hex editor, which actually lets you look inside files. Even if the format of the file is corrupted in such a way that Juno itself, the Juno program, can't open it, all the data is probably still there in a form that can be at least kind of scraped out of it. I mean, it would at least have some the kind of the information you want, like the email addresses and the
kinds
of things
you talk
about.
Well, I can actually get the email addresses.
So it's just the contents of the mail.
Contents. Yeah. I mean, it's all my business correspondence.
Well, I understand. Yeah, I understand. You know, I mean, anytime this happens with any program, when the data file gets either damaged or somehow unreadable. Generally, the data is still there. Mm-hmm. It's just that the file format's changed enough that the program that you normally would use can't parse it. But you could still look at the data. So, I mean, if you felt ambitious, you could download their free a hex editor. I'll put a link in the show notes to a good one.
Okay.
And then what you do is you have to figure out where is that email stored. It'll probably be the largest file on that CD. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Open that large file, and the hex editor will actually show you the raw data, and then on the right in a panel, it'll show you what that means in plain text.
Uh-huh.
And that will probably be the contents of your email. At that point, you know, it's a fairly laborious task. Are there thousands of messages in there?
No.
Good.
But hundreds.
Hundreds. Well, it might be worth it to you to be able to cut and paste that data, which you'd be able to do.
I would, and it would be worth it to me to actually pay somebody. I mean, I've never had a geeks.com guy or any of those people come, but, you know, I know they're out there driving around in their cars.
Their little famous red and white Mini Coopers. You mean the Make It Work
right
guys? Yeah.
Right.
They could do it. If you feel ambitious, it's something you probably could do too. You just need a hex editor and you need to open that file and look at it.
All right, well, I'll take a look at the show notes.
Yeah, I'll put in the show notes. There are a lot of good hex editors out there that are absolutely free.
Well, I asked the guy at Juno, one of the several people that I talked to, and he said that when you store your emails with attachments on them, it tends to corrupt the emails. I said, well, who knew? I mean, you know, if I'd known that, maybe I would have done things differently. But I asked him if there was any programs that he knew of that could be used to repair or extract from, and he said, no such thing. Doesn't exist.
Yeah, I mean, here's the bottom line on it. I mean, Juno, the software is not very good, and it shouldn't be storing. No other email program does that.
Mm-hmm.
And if an email program allows files to get corrupted by the way it's working, then it's not a very good email program. Yeah. I, like you, keep my life in my email.
Yeah.
I can't afford to lose it.
Yeah.
So a good email program actually doesn't, you know, the real power email programs don't even store email as in a file. Outlook does that, and I don't like that. That's why I don't use Outlook.
Well, what would you recommend? Because I'm ready to jump ship. I mean, Verizon is my internet service provider.
Oh, good. Get rid of Juno then. You don't need Juno.
I mean,
Juno.
I'm not dependent on Juno for anything other than this, you know.
Well, what you can do is keep the Juno account. Make sure that any mail that comes, because you want that address, right? Make sure, and it's cheap to keep it. Make sure that any mail comes to that is automatically, if you can, I don't know how capable Juno is. It may not be able to do this, but manually, if you can't, forwarded to a real email address where you have a copy of it. And then when you correspond with people, you respond from that real email address. Pretty soon they get the picture. Oh, this is the address. She wants us to use the Verizon address.
Uh-huh.
So that's probably, you know, the way to do it. It's how, unfortunately, that's true for all of us. You get very tied to your email address.
Well, I don't know that Juno will actually do that, because when I got my Gmail email account, it asked me right away, do you want to have it forwarded to any other accounts? And I, you know, said, oh, this is good. I'll have it forwarded to my Juno, because then it'll download onto my computer and I'll have a copy there.
Right.
But I don't know that Juno will actually forward it.
It may not. If it's not, you know, it's free. You get what you pay for, right? So,
not free exactly, but almost.
And there is a cost, in fact, a very high cost, you've just learned.
Well, no, it actually,
for
I
free.
Am paying Juno.
Yeah, but there's a cost. There's a cost for the free Juno, too, or even the $10 a year, because the cost was... You now have a lot. There's quite a big cost. So it is probably a false economy to go with somebody like that.
No, I agree.
Certainly on your business.
And I don't need it. I just, like I said, I've just been reluctant.
Yeah, no, I understand. I'll put a hex editor on the show notes. It's very easy. Or you just do a Google search for a free hex editor. There's a lot of them. It's a Windows program. You open up the file. You'll probably see the text of your emails in there, and you can cut and paste out what you need. And then from now on, what I would strongly suggest is use a real internet service provider. Frankly, for business email, for this very reason, what I would do is go to somebody like GoDaddy or Dotster and register a domain name that's your business name. And they have email forwarding services. They're very inexpensive, and, you know, $50 a year or whatever. And so mail that would go to, whatever it is, Leslie's, driedflowers.com. So if you send somebody sent you an email, and this is the address you use from now on for everybody, and then you tell it where that email ends up, So you never again have to worry about this. This becomes your email address. You know, all my email goes to leoville.com. That's not my internet service provider. There isn't really anybody at leoville.com. It's just a forwarder that then goes to my real address, and I've moved it many times. So for business, it's a very good idea. You know, it's $9 a year to register a domain name at GoDaddy. I don't know what their mail forwarding costs, but it probably doesn't cost very much. And from then on, you have a permanent address that's never going to change, and you don't have to worry about this. You've been tied to Juno for far too long because you needed the email address. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. It's 1249.
The Jesus Christ Show, tomorrow morning, 6 to 9 a.m., KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
1256, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. DJ Orange pointed out in the chat room that Yahoo sells internet domain names for $2.99 a year. Wow! Now, that's a good price. I don't know what their email forwarding costs, but that's a good deal. You can find that and more in the show notes. Just go to KFIAM640.com. Click my name, Leo Laporte, on the left. Show notes are online. This is show 245 for May 6th, 2006. Still a little bit behind in the podcast. I do make available on that site all of the shows, the audio from all the previous shows, and I'm catching up bit by bit. Thanks to DSL Extreme for the bandwidth for the podcast and for the chat room. You'll find a link on the left to both if you go to KFIAM640.com and click my name, Leo Laporte. Albert, Louisiana, welcome to KFI. Hello, Albert.
Hey, Leo. I've been watching you and listening to you since 1998, and I figured this is about time to call.
Wow, that's a long time. Now, if you've been watching that long, I'm thinking that you are, I'm trying to remember what town it was in Louisiana. What town in Louisiana are you in?
West Monroe.
West Monroe, okay. So, yeah we were on very early in Louisiana, I think.
Well, I got it on DirecTV.
Yeah.
On ZDTV.
There you go. What can I do for you today?
I've got a little question here. I've got my computer in a rather small room because it won't fit in the living room. And in order to watch TV, I put a 13-inch TV next to my computer monitor.
Ah.
And only when the TV is on, I get like a small, semi-transparent gray line that goes down my computer monitor screen.
Hmm.
And I was wondering if that would eventually cause any damage to my computer monitor, or was it nothing to worry about?
It's probably a magnetic interference from the television. There's a big coil in the back of the television that's probably putting out a field. You don't see any color, kind of weird bending distortion or color on the screen at all? Just that black gray line, huh?
Yeah, on the computer monitor.
I've never seen that.
Fine.
Yeah, it's not unusual that that would kind of distort the computer monitor a little bit. The monitor is a CRT, yes?
Yes.
Yeah. No, I don't think any long-term damage, although if you can move the TV even 6 inches away, it should go away. Does it? If you move it away, is it right next to the monitor?
Well, it's fairly close. I'd say it's probably about 4 inches away because
the reason I asked, there's two possibilities. It could be magnetic or RF interference from the TV, or it could be it's putting noise into the electrical, and that's what you're seeing on the monitor. If it's that, if that's the case, then it'd probably be a good idea to get a little surge suppressor on the thing, or just get some line filtering on it so that it doesn't.
Yeah, I had thought about a TV tuner card, but this computer.
Yeah, why bother you?
Too antiquated.
Yeah, why bother? I mean, you know that's a good solution. Put a little 13-inch next to it. Sounds like it's kind of a hot, cramped room to watch TV in, but.
Well, yeah, but not really any choice. my living room is full of audio video.
He goes off in the corner just to watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, you know, I wouldn't worry about it. I don't think that's going to cause any damage, but I do think what you're seeing is interference from the television, obviously. And the question is it a magnetic interference or is it electrical interference coming through the wire? If it's magnetic, moving it farther away would help, and not doesn't have to be much farther away. If it's electrical, then isolating the electrical circuit a little bit, getting some line filtering on it would help. Either way, I don't think you're doing long-term damage. Thanks for the call. Thanks for listening in Louisiana. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. At 1 o'clock, let's head to the KFI News Center. Lisa Osborne has the latest.
May 6th, 2006.
Highs in the upper 60s to about 80 degrees in the warmest spots. Currently 69 in Lake Forest. Mission Viejo's checking in at 65, 63 in Hollywood, 73 degrees in Glendale. KFI's the talk station that does live local news on the hour, on the half, and when it breaks, it's 106. I'm Lisa Osborne, KFI News.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Lisa. On KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. 1-800-520-1KFI is my phone number. 1-800-520-1534. Beautiful. Interesting story out of Orlando. DirecTV fired 40 employees, 40 installers, after giving interviews to the Channel 6 News in Orlando, Florida, about a company policy they say forced them to lie to customers. When you order a DirecTV, apparently, I haven't had a DirecTV in a couple of years, so I'm not sure. When you order a DirecTV, you know, normally they have a phone jack on there. And at least in my day, you needed to connect the phone up, because that's how DirecTV got its updates, you know. If you didn't call, actually, this was for the TiVo, though, come to think of it. The TiVo wouldn't work if you didn't call, but the DirecTV worked fine. The installers apparently were told by their bosses that customers had to hook up the phone line. If we don't lie to the customers, the installer said, we get back charged for it and we don't make money. Of course, DirecTV likes that phone line hooked up because that's how it can send information about what you're watching home. But apparently, I didn't know this, it's not required. It enhances the service. It allows you to order movies through a remote control instead of calling the phone or using the internet. But basically, it also makes money for DirecTV and the installers. So the installers are all fired, after 40 of them, after talking to the Channel 6 News. I guess the installers didn't like the idea of the fact that they had to lie to people. Now, they were working for a company called Maztec, which claims that there was some misrepresentation. I'm not sure, in fact, after reading this story on the Channel 6 site, whether DirecTV fired them or Maztec. I think Maztec probably fired them. So what is it? Do you need to hook up that phone line to your DirecTV? I don't think you have to. I had to because I had a TiVo on it, now that I think of it. Then that TiVo does need to phone home every few days. But I don't think you have to just because you have a DirecTV. It'll work without that. It's only for ordering movies. But if it is hooked up, DirecTV likes that because they get some more information about what you're doing. So for privacy reasons, you might want to unhook that phone line. And I have to feel bad for these 40 installers who are fired because they didn't want to do it. 1-800-520-1KFI. 1-800-520-1534. Let's say hi to Robert in Santa Margarita, our next caller. Hello, Robert. Welcome.
Hi, how are you? I need your help desperately.
Well, Robert, I'm glad I could be here. I hope I can help you. What can I do for you?
I just completed building my own system from the ground up with all new parts.
Yay.
Everything went smoothly. The operating system loaded, but I can only get into the operating system on safe mode.
Aha. Uh-huh.
When I go in normal, I get a gray screen.
Okay. So it's a driver issue at this point.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. You were using Windows XP Service Pack 2.
I haven't loaded Service Pack 2 yet.
So the XP that you have just has Service Pack 1 on it.
Just has Service Pack 1, okay. And then I would download Service Pack 2.
Sure.
I even tried Windows 98. Same thing.
Same thing. You get a gray screen.
Yes. After the XP, or in case of Windows 98, after the logo comes up and it starts to presumably load the drivers.
Right.
Then it just turns to not a black screen, a gray screen.
Well, a couple of things real quickly. You can see what driver is crashing by doing the bootlogged boot up. You know, if you hit when you get to the start menu to go into the safe mode, one of the choices besides safe mode is bootlog. And that'll write a text file to your root directory called bootlog.txt that just logs every driver as it starts to load it. And chances are the last line is loading, and I'm going to bet video driver, and you won't see. Normally what you'd see is loading driver, driver loaded, loading next driver, driver loaded. And right up to the end, the last line, that's the one that failed. Now, it sounds like a video driver issue. What video card are you using?
I tried several video cards, an AGP and a PCI. Didn't like either one of those.
Interesting. Now the plot thickens.
There is not a video on the motherboard.
That's interesting. So what happens when you boot in a safe mode, I think you know, is you get a very limited, simple set of drivers, including a plain old VGA 640 by 480 driver for the video card.
That's right.
And it can handle that. But for some reason, it can't handle any higher resolution, because the minute it tries to go there, what kind of monitor are you using? What kind of monitor are you using?
I tried it on about three different monitors, including my Samsung 213T 21-inch flat screen.
You're being very enterprising. You've swapped them all out.
Everything that I can think of to swap.
And that's a good way to diagnose a problem, because if the problem were the video card or the monitor, swapping it would eliminate it. But it hasn't.
That's right.
So now I think we're down to
you. That's why I called you.
Yeah, no kidding. Thanks. I get all the unsolvable problems. So that's interesting. It sounds like there's a motherboard issue now, I'm thinking. You might look in your BIOS settings.
Okay.
First thing I would do is reset the BIOS settings to default, and then maybe go in and play with them a little bit to see what's going on. For instance, if you're using AGP texturing, maybe that's set too high. Maybe disable. What you want to do is kind of start disabling advanced features, particularly around video, and see if any of that fixes it. And then that will be a very good clue, if it does, as to what's going on.
Okay.
I would say almost undoubtedly that's, clearly what's happening is you can't run higher color or higher resolutions.
Okay, so continuing to reinstall Windows is not going to get me.
No, in fact, I thought it was, again, very enterprising. You tried it with two different versions of Windows with the same result.
Absolutely.
That's very telling. You know, that means it's not the software. I mean, I guess if you really wanted to go crazy, you'd get a Linux boot disk and see what happened with that.
I can do that.
Yeah, especially if you have one of those live CDs, you can just boot from it without installing it. That'd be a very quick and easy way. See if it can get into the X window, which is going to be a higher resolution. You know, the graphic user interface is going to be a higher resolution. It's going to be much like Windows. My suspicion is you're going to have the same issue, because it really sounds like the minute it tries to shift over into another resolution, something goes wrong. And what's weird is you've done it with different video cards. So it's not video card specific. I could see, for instance, if the video card had TV out, it would be shifting over to a different connector or something like that.
And more telling on the motherboard is the fact that I have built two identical systems with identical product.
Right.
And the other one did fine.
Yeah. I'm thinking it's a BIOS issue. That's the only thing I can think of. And I would go into your BIOS, I would reset it, and then I would look particularly at, the AGP settings, timing issues, things like that. Because that's sure what it sounds like to me.
Okay, and do all the, well, in the BIOS, and then...
try a live CD with Linux. Yeah, see if that works. That will really eliminate both drivers and operating system, because if the same thing happens in Linux, well, it's not Windows, and it's not drivers, it's hardware, and it's probably, unlikely that it could be something wrong with the motherboard, but it seems more likely that it is something going on in BIOS, which means it's something you could easily fix. That would be my best guess. David Santa Ana, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, David.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Very good. Have a question here. Got a new notebook mailed out from the computer vendor. My old one, for some reason, spuriously seems to just go out like a crowbar, like a light or something like that, every once in a while when the high-speed fan kicks in for cooling. And anyway, so they sent out a new one. It's the exact same model, and I was hoping just be able to go ahead and swap out the disk drives, and that doesn't seem to be able to work. It's running XP SP2.
That's interesting. So it's exactly the same model, and the motherboard would be exactly the same.
Yeah.
But switching the what happens when you switch to the, it won't boot up when you switch hard drives?
Well, fortunately, I didn't put my drive in the new system. I kind of took the new system drive and put it in the old system first just to go ahead and try it.
Yeah.
And it sort of comes up with the safe mode screen.
Yeah.
And when you try to go into safe mode, it just kind of gives you that quick blue screen of like error message that goes by and you can't even read it and goes back into, you know, booting up for the safe mode again.
Hmm. Ooh, that's not good.
So I'm just wondering, is there some, you know, something that you can do?
Well, I'm wondering if you got the same motherboard. It sounds to me like they gave you a different motherboard.
Oh, okay.
And
so a different motherboard.
Yeah, and that means the motherboard drivers are incompatible.
Hmm.
So
there's no way.
Well, it's tricky. I mean, what if it came with, and I doubt it did, laptops usually don't, if it came with a CD with the drivers on it, like the motherboard drivers, or if you could get online and find motherboard drivers, you could apply them. You'd have to boot into a command line mode, and it's kind of a tricky thing to do. Your best bet would be to rebuild the system, save your data, and rebuild the system.
All right. Best thing to do that with is, like that backup my PC program, or...
Yeah, I mean, even just copy it all. You have a CD burner in there, a DVD burner?
Yes, CD, DVD.
Yeah. So you're able to get into the system. I mean, how are you going to do it?
Yeah, I can still get it. Well, I still have the data because I didn't put the old drive in the new system. I just wanted to go ahead and test it.
Got it.
Yeah, the new drive.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, that's right.
I said, I'm not moving my thing over there and have to get messed up.
That's smart. So you have two duplicate systems at this point?
Yes.
Okay, so they didn't just replace the motherboard. They sent you another system.
Yeah.
And you have to send the old system back now.
Exactly.
I see. I'm sorry. I didn't understand that. All right. Yeah, I mean, back up your data. And then this new system that they sent you, don't swap hard drives.
Right.
You know, just copy the data over. In fact, you don't even have to back up your data. You can hook the two up with a Ethernet cable and just copy the data over. I would do that.
I would do that.
Yeah, I would do that. It sounds
ad hoc.
Yeah, just do it. Yeah, exactly. Ad hoc network. It sounds on wireless. It sounds what happened is that even though it seems like it's the same laptop, they've upgraded something. And so the motherboard drivers that are tightly tied to Windows that are on the other drive don't work with this new one.
Oh.
Does that make sense?
Okay. So that's just stuff that goes ahead and gets loaded in. So.
Right. You have to. And so that's why Windows won't boot. It's saying, whoa, wait a minute. Hold on. It looks like identical laptops, but apparently it's not. So just copy the data.
So we can just go ahead and do an will the ad hoc network work over the wireless?
Yeah.
Wow, that's really great.
Yeah, just copy the data over and send the whole thing back. You got a brand new hard drive, might as well keep it.
All right. And what type of, just for another particular situation, what type of any, you know, format or good brand of USB drives for backups and so forth?
Oh, it doesn't really matter. You know, there's a lot of good ones. The new Western Digital MyBooks are huge, you know, up to 500 gigabytes. They're external, and then you just plug them in, and then you can move them around. I think that's a very good way to go for a backup. But any external drive will be fine. Maxtor, Western Digital, Seagate—they're all, you know, they're all about the same. It's a commoditized business now. So
yeah, most of those people like come with utilities, so that if something happens, you can just
They have one button. You know, Maxtor has this one button backup. Don't waste your money on that. Get an external hard drive. And copy the data over either by hand or use a synchronization tool. Microsoft has one called SyncToy that'll automatically make folders match. And that's the best way to do it. But I think an external hard drive is absolutely now the way to go for backup. Fast, very easy. They're huge. You can move them from machine to machine. In fact, that might be a good thing to get today instead of trying to do this wireless backup over the network. Just back it up on an old hard drive. Then you'll have a good backup.
And just move it over. Yeah, actually, because I have a friend that's going to be wanting to go over from ME to XP.
Perfect.
So,
that's a good way to do it. But again, now, in your case and also in your friend's case, remember, you're just backing up data. Don't back up Windows. Don't back up applications. You're only backing up data. The stuff in the documents and settings folder. If you back up Windows, you're likely to back up those drivers, and you're going to screw it up again.
Oh, yeah. Just kind of move that stuff.
Just
back
get
up
your data.
Over there,
so. Just get your data.
All right.
Okay. Hey, thank you, David. Good luck. Hey, it sounds like a good company. The fact that they just gave you a whole new replacement is really the best way to respond to a situation like that. Just copy your data over and say, hey, I got a new computer. 121, Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio.
What do you get when you mix more stimulating talk radio to your weekends? Duh. More stimulating weekends.
Duh. 128 on KFI AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Duh. Leo Laporte, the tech guy on KFI. Phone number is 1-800-520-1KFI. I'll be here till 2. And then Dr. Dean Idell. Right after Dr. Dean, got a fresh John and Ken for you. Great afternoon ahead. Make sure you stay tuned to KFI. I'm going to keep taking your calls, though, for another half hour. More information on the things we talk about are available from the show notes website. Wouldn't be much of a computer show if it didn't have a web page. And, of course, I do. Just go to KFIAM640.com and click my name, Leo Laporte. That'll take you to the web page. And you can fill out the form if you want at the bottom and add to it. There's quite a few comments in there. In fact, Jeff put a great link up to NASA's How to Solder Videos. What a great idea. I like that. That's great. Now, somebody mentioned that Maxtor and Seagate have terabyte units. Now, those are terabyte RAID arrays. They have multiple drives in them, which makes them very expensive, power-hungry, noisy, and, I mean, unless you have a call for that much data, I wouldn't bother. 500 gigabytes is a single drive, and that is the largest single drive. I think the my drives, or my books, are quite good for external drives. Fairly reasonable. Good price. Hey, more of your calls coming up in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio at 129. Lisa Osborne's in the KFI News Center.
They've taken Southern California by storm. Now they're invading your weekend.
Go! John and Ken, Saturdays starting at 3.
137. KFI, AM 640. More stimulating talk radio. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. On KFI, Lori in Apple Valley, welcome. You're next on KFI.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Lori.
I decided to take your advice, and I got a wireless G broadband router.
Okay.
And I brought it home. My 14-year-old son looked at it and said, Linksys, those run slow. You don't want that. Okay, so he thinks it ought to be a Netgear, not a Linksys. What's your opinion?
Gamers love Netgear. Is he a gamer?
He'd like to be. Let's put it that way.
No, they're all the same. Linksys, Linksys was the first, right? They were really the first widely purchased broadband routers. Cisco bought them a couple of years ago. And sometimes I hear quality issues with them, but it's under warranty. If it doesn't work, you'll take it back. But they don't run slow. I don't know what he's talking about when it says they run slow. They all run about the same. In fact, the router is much faster than your internet is, unless you've somehow come up with 6 or 7 megabit internet, which is unlikely. Your router is actually not the slowest part of your internet access.
Okay.
So I wouldn't worry about it.
Fabulous. How hard is it going to be to set up the encryption on this?
Pretty easy, although this is where Linksys kind of really went wrong. They have this kind of simplified, easy setup. But I found it actually more difficult to use than just a regular setup. But if you follow the instructions, it's pretty straightforward. Here's what you need to know.
Okay.
Bottom line is turn on WPA encryption, use a good password for it, and you're absolutely secure. And that's all you really need. Nothing else makes any difference. So don't let your 14-year-old tell you you have to do anything else with that. That's simple. WPA encryption, when you first log on to that router with a laptop or a computer you've never used on it before, it'll ask you for the password. You enter in that password, you'll never have to enter it again. It just remembers from then on. And it keeps your neighbors from snooping on you, keeps them off your network, keeps hackers from hacking into your network. It's all you really need. In fact, it's the only thing that really works.
This is good. So should I take off my my Symantec internet security, the Norton?
Yeah, I don't think you need it. You know, it doesn't replace an antivirus or anti-spyware, but it does replace a software firewall. And I think it's all you need. Software firewalls do some things that a hardware router, which is, by the way, the same as a hardware firewall, don't do. But none of those things, I think, are key. And software firewalls add all sorts of complexity and issues. And, boy, when I hear the words Norton Internet Security, I always shiver in my boots because almost always that means there's going to be a problem. So,
okay.
Yeah, there is some, you can make the case that there's some additional security from a software firewall, but I think the complexity and problems it adds far outweigh the minor improvement in security.
Well, then I'll go ahead and install the one that I bought.
Good. And don't be too hard on your son. He's just trying to be hip.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Lori. I appreciate the call. I should probably go to Broadband Reports or somewhere and see. I mean, there may be some, people saying, oh, it's slightly faster. But I honestly don't think that the router speed, unless it's really slow, is an issue. And I've used Linksys for years, and I've never had any issue with that. Netgear's fine. Nothing wrong with it. I like Netgear. I like D-Link. SMC makes good routers. These are all wireless. But Linksys is fine. I think that their success has in some ways hurt them. They've tried to put some easy wizards on them that are just aren't very wizard. That can be really a hassle. But I think in general, Linksys makes... I mean, the gear is fine. They're all using the same chipset now, to be honest with you. So I don't think it makes... that much difference. Let me see. I got an email from Sean, who works on my TV show, because we were talking about Linksys, and I actually asked him. I said, "Have you seen any issues with Linksys?" And he said, "No, no." But then he recently tried to install a Linksys router, and his real issue was, and I agree with him, just the software. The install software makes it kind of more complicated than it should be. It should actually make it easier. It doesn't seem to. Barbara, Lake Forest, KFI, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Barbara.
Hi, Leo. Sitting here paying my bills waiting for you.
Well, I think by now you probably got them all done. Yeah, I was going to say. You must have a lot of bills.
I do. I live in Lake Forest.
Well, there you go. Well, I'm glad we were able to do something productive while we were waiting.
Listen, I'm so computer illiterate, but I've been listening to you for probably well over a year, and I knew you were the guy I needed to call.
Wow.
So,
good.
I have a two-fold question.
Yes.
I have a V2 Premier computer that I've had for approximately 3 years, and to make a horribly long story short, it kept shutting off on me. Finally went through a whole bunch of different things, found out that my Ethernet card was no good. I had a guy put in a new Ethernet card. It got me back on line, but I cannot, my USB ports and my printer does not work. So now he's telling me I need a new motherboard, and he's saying, listen,
get a new computer.
Toss it and get a new one.
I would agree with him. Do you have, you live in Lake Forest. Your power supply is pure, pristine, and 100% all the time, right?
Yes. It's fine.
The only reason I'm a little concerned that things are starting to fail like this. Sometimes that's a sign of power spikes and brownouts, and it's taxing the machine. So if that's the case, if you're getting a lot of those, a new machine might fail quickly too.
Actually, what they found out also, I should have mentioned, was that the fan against the motherboard had broken a little thing and popped up.
Oh,
and
dear.
So we replaced that also. And so now, obviously, it's cooling the motherboard in it. But anyway.
Well, maybe it was overheating. Maybe that was just all. It was just overheating, and that's why all these things failed.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But now my question is if I do purchase a new computer, I would like to know, because I pretty much just go like on the web and I search it and I do some pictures and I do, maybe copy some disks and stuff like that. What should I be looking at and where should I get it and what price range?
What do you do with your computer?
Search the web, do email, do some pictures, and copy, like the rewritable disk thing.
And you burning music, or are you doing music, or just burning data onto a disk?
Just burning data onto a disk.
So mostly you're using the internet. It's an internet device for you, it sounds like.
Pretty much. Although I would like to have somebody, which I'm going to do now if I do get a new one, come over and show me how to get more out of my computer than I have been.
What would you like to do?
That's a good question. What
do you
want to
do? Video? Do you want to do?
Yeah, I would like to do things with my pictures and do some videos with my movie camera and
Okay.
Probably that's pretty much it.
Okay.
Because I'm not, I don't work, and so I don't put any business things on there.
Barbara, now don't get scared when I say this word, okay? But I think you are a great candidate for a Macintosh.
Oh, gosh. No.
I scared her.
Oh, you did. In fact, my son-in-law has access to those, and he's like, do you want me to get you a Mac? And
yes.
I'm like, I don't think so.
Yes. Now, here's why.
That's a whole new world.
Yeah, it's not that different. A computer's a computer. Here's why, though. There's no spyware issues. There's no virus issues. Surfing the net is exactly the same. For making, you know, things like video, it's far superior.
Right.
It is, I just think, a more secure, more reliable computer. And, you know, none of the reasons that you would get a PC are for business software, for gaming. You don't do either of those.
None of that.
I think for home computer users, most of them really ought to be using a Mac. It's also better looking.
Mm-hmm.
It's an attractive, you know, you won't be such an eyesore in the room.
It is attractive. My husband has one sitting right here next to
me. Oh, your husband's got one?
Well, he has one, but I don't want to use his because he does his own thing. So
you've got, but you've got some support there. You already have somebody who's using a Mac.
Well, he doesn't know what he's doing at all. He knows less than I do. So.
Well, you're both starting from zero. It doesn't really matter. Here's the big difference. Okay, on Windows, the start button's at the bottom of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
On the Mac, there isn't a start button, but you have this dock, which is on the left of the screen. I mean, it's little things like that really aren't going to take you very long. I'll be honest with you. I would imagine you drive a fairly nice automobile.
Mm-hmm.
You don't drive a Saturn, do you?
No. I drive a
BMW.
SUV. SUV sucks up the gas, yeah.
Yeah, but what you like a little bit more of a luxury kind of a feel?
See, yeah,
that's the difference between a PC and a Mac. It's more like a Saturn versus a BMW or a Saturn versus a Cadillac. You're paying a little more. It's a premium price product. But I think for you, for what you're doing, I don't see any compelling reason to buy Windows. And I think you'd be a lot safer and a lot happier with a Mac. I know. I've just thrown you a big curve.
But then you don't have MSN Messenger and all those little extra things that I do, like with my family.
Ah, now that actually is... Okay, now you've come up with something that is Windows specific, which is MSN Messenger.
Right.
Stopped making... Let me see if they... They stopped updating MSN Messenger for the Mac. You can still use it on the Mac, and you can still use programs like... Adium and stuff that will allow you to talk to people on MSN Messenger. So I don't think that's going to be a big issue. Your husband doesn't get involved in that IMing, huh?
No, not at all.
And they use MSN Messenger.
He's a fisherman, so he looks up fishing reports and temperatures.
Right. they still make, I'm looking, the Messenger for the Mac, no, they still make it. It's 5.1.1. They still make it for the Mac. So I think that's not going to be an issue.
Before I use up all your time, just if I was to get a desktop, what kind should I get?
Just get a Dell.
A Dell?
Yeah. They're mail order. They're very high quality. Very low price.
Just order it online?
Yep. And I think Dell makes very good equipment. I could go on and on, but really one word is enough, Dell.
Right. And I just look up there and find my requirements that I need.
DELL.com, yep.
The RAM
but don't call
that.
Me if you have a spyware issue or a virus issue, because you didn't listen to me.
Okay,
that's the biggest difference. Right, to be honest with you, that's the difference is the security issue, and I think that's a real issue. I moved my mom off Windows onto a PC just because I was afraid of her having spyware and virus issues.
Well, I've never had that problem.
I know why you don't want to buy a Mac, because your husband would then be right.
Well, my son and my stepson.
Your stepson would be right. You're the lone Windows holdout in the family. Now I understand.
I am. And I've been doing this, honestly, for about 6 years, and I'm so used to it. I guess I'm afraid of something.
If you're comfortable and it's working for you and you've never gotten a virus or spyware, that's fine. Go ahead and get a Dell.
Okay.
All right.
And do it online? There's stores you can go around?
Oh, there are lots of great stores. Yeah, but I think Dell is fine.
No, I'm saying that Carrie Dell.
No, Dell is mail order. No, Dell is mail order only.
All mail order.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, why go to a store when they'll come and bring it to you? And just
they do.
Oh yeah, and get the in-home support so they come. So if there's something goes wrong, A technician comes and he fixes it for you.
Okay.
That's what you want.
All right.
All right.
I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Take care.
Thanks,
Leo LaPorte, the tech guy, KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio.
The KFI News Team works weekends. KFI News, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
157 KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio. Let's see if we can get one more in before Dr. Dean Adell. He's up here in just a few more minutes. Steve and Covino, welcome to KFI.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Steve.
I have a problem I hope you can help me with.
I hope so, too.
I've got a Compact Presario. It's a little over a year old, and the problem is the fan accelerates about every 10 minutes, and it runs for about 2 minutes nonstop, and this happens 24 hours a day. I'd want to know.
That's annoying. It might be in software. I mean, is it a laptop or a desktop?
It's a desktop.
Desktop. This is more common in laptops, but some computers do this. My Mac tower does this. It has variable speed fans that speed up when it gets hotter.
Right. Yeah, I thought it had something to do with the heat, but it does it in the wintertime. It does.
And it's kind of consistent every few minutes, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like every 10 minutes, then it runs for 2 minutes, and then it goes back down, and this goes on and on. So.
And it's really annoying you because it's noisy?
Oh, sure, yeah. It's almost blocked out the sound from the television.
Oh, boy, that's really annoying.
Yeah. So you think it has something to do with the software?
Yeah. It's basically power management.
Okay.
You might play with the power management, but I have a feeling that what you really want to do is call Compaq and say, you know, there's something wrong here.
Oh, okay. I had taken it into them, and they said they couldn't duplicate it, and they said they refaced my hard drive, and it stopped for a while, but then it started right back up again.
See, I think they probably have automatic fan speed in there.
Okay.
And it probably, it sounds to me like the sensor has gone bad in the temperature, thermocouple.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I'm thinking that's something that they should fix. The problem is if they can't duplicate it, it's going to be hard for them to fix.
Right. I couldn't figure out why they couldn't duplicate it because it's
consistent, huh?
As soon as we got it plugged back in and
it did it immediately.
On, it started doing it right again.
You know, the other
so
thing would be
it
could be a surge in power in your house as well. I mean, one thing it wouldn't be a bad thing to have anyway is an uninterruptible power supply on that thing.
Right.
It's just a good. They're not expensive. It's a good thing to have anyway. It's a battery backup, but what it does is also conditions the power so it's absolutely consistent.
Okay.
But what I would do is I'd ask Compaq, do you have variable speed fans in here?
Right.
And if they do, that's controlled by software interacting with a temperature thermocouple. And it could well be that there's a software issue in their power supply. Hey,
all
good
right.
luck, Steve. We're running
thanks
out of time, but that's my best guess for you. Dean Adell's up next. I'll be back tomorrow, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. to talk high tech with you. Will you join me? I look forward to it. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy on KFI, AM 640, more stimulating talk radio at 159. It's Lisa Osborne in the KFI News Center. Have a great day.
May 6th, 2006.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, sir.
Well, that's it for this edition of The Tech Guy on KFI. Thanks so much for listening. If you're ever in the Southern California area, I hope you'll listen live on the radio every Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on KFI AM 640. You can also listen on the internet anytime at KFIAM640.com. Archives of older shows are available online on my website. That's leo.am. Click the audio archives button. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, which is leo.am/podcasts/KFI. My thanks to Howard Bailey for providing the theme music for this show. You can listen to Howard's music at soundclick.com. Thanks to DSL Extreme for providing the bandwidth. Of course, first of all, thanks to you for listening. I'll see you next time on KFI.